Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Celtic State of Mind. It is Friday. My name is Laura Bradburn and I am joined today by Brian Degnan. How are you doing, Brian?
Top draw, Laura. How are you?
Not too bad. Enjoying this lovely weather that we've got outside. I don't know what it's like down where you are, but it's absolutely chucking it down up here. So, yeah, pretty much the same.
Much the same, sadly. The weather's a bit nicer down south, but it's not exactly tropical. So, the sun came away for another year.
No, exactly. I think that's unfortunately the case. Jim, you are back after your 2 week hiatus. How are you doing?
Good. Laura had to shut the windows there. How on outside?
It's absolutely rank rotten, as they say. We'll hunker up for the afternoon and we'll talk some stuff Celtic. First thing we wanted to talk about today is birthday boy Jimmy Johnston. He would have been 78 years old today on the 30th of September. He was born on the 30th of September 1944. I guess the first thing we need to do is go to the only person who maybe has a living memory of having seen him play. Jim, am I being a bit unkind to you there, or do you have
Of course, yeah. I mean, as you always say with any of these Lisbon lines, that these are really kind of ordinary men that live this kind of extraordinary life. Unique talent, voted Celtic's greatest ever player in 2002. At a time when Henrik was obviously the kind of top boy, I had a wee sneaking feeling Henrik might have maybe just a sneaked it at the time. Jinky didn't play for a good, 30 years before that. So 25, 30 years before that, but still won it. Brave little man, took a lot of kickings in his day. Racing Club Argentina, Atletico Madrid are two that come to mind. He's really good upper body strength for a wee guy. He also played at a time when it was very, very physical. Teams were encouraged to kick players up and down the park. They played in horrendous parks as well. And that's why I don't think you can compare people from different generations. When people do the old kind of Maradona or Pele or Messi or whoever, you can't compare people from different eras. Any of you youngins, if you ever look at any photographs of some of the games back in the 60s and the 70s, I mean, some of them were just mud heaps where you couldn't actually walk on them. You'll never mind play football when you've got other games where the pitch is complete ice, complete snow. So how would Messi fare back then? And also at a time when, in this day and age, you can't kick players the way you could kick them back in the day. So, it's much easier to play in the modern game. So would Jinky survive in the modern game? Absolutely, 200%. Would Messi survive in the game back then? Don't know. Discuss. In later life, he obviously suffered a horrendous disease and died far too young. But I was a number of years ago, wrote down some ideas for plays, Celtic plays I would write at some point if I got the chance. Different seasons or triumphs or players, and Jinky was always one, and sketched out a few ideas, but it always ended with him at the Bernabeu in 67 when he holds the ball up in his hand. It's such an iconic and dramatic image in terms of that. It's like he's got the whole football world in his hand. This wee guy for Yoddingston, the previous week, has won the European Cup, and then he's going to the home of the greatest team in the world at that point in time, Real Madrid, and he's ripped them apart. And he gets a standing ovation from their fans. And another 8 years at Celtic after that, and he's lots of good games, lots of fantastic games, but that moment will never be beat in terms of that was a pinnacle. Once you're standing there with that in your hand, can he beat that? And obviously his name lives on through the Jim Simonetti and the guys down at Jimmy Johnston Football Academy. So that's a great tribute to Jinky as well. Yeah, but a unique individual, we'll never see his likes again.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, you're probably in a similar position to me of having heard the tales, heard the stories. We've had the opportunity to see our own Celtic greats in our lifetime, but Jimmy Johnston specifically, what do you think of when you think of him?
So, I've actually shared this story with Jim privately in the past, but Jimmy Johnston, my old granddad used to call me Jinky when I was a wee boy. Now, it's not through my football ability, because I'm rotten, but it's the fact that I'm short and I had red curly hair. He used to say, oh, where's wee Jinky? Where's wee Jinky? So as I got older and then realised that's a nice nickname to have. And I remember, now I'll try and keep composure here, but my granddad sort of got dementia and things and died. And one of the last times I went to speak to him, I was standing with my mum and he didn't recognise me, but he kept asking my mum for wee Jinky, where's wee Jinky? And so personally, whenever I hear the name Jimmy Johnston, Jinky, I think that, I also think about my old granddad as well. So it's the effect that, I mean, I can't add into what Jim said about his footballing ability because everyone knows that, but that's what whenever I think of Celtic and I think of Jimmy Johnston, I always think about my family and that connection. And I think it's kind of, he was also one of the players that it was the first time I heard like a Hollywood celebrity talking about him. Because Robert De Waal is an absolutely massive Jimmy Johnston fan, and it was so, and he's an actor I love. And I remember when I was younger and I heard them talking about him, I was like, is he talking about Celtic's Jimmy Johnston? And it's just that personality, that thing, he just transcended so much. And just lastly, when you talk about sort of links and lasting memories, one of the things that I was always a big Steve McManus fan, right? I just thought he was a great human being. I met him a couple of times. I thought, he had a good story as homegrown captain, but my favourite thing was one of the last pictures I was taking of Jinky was him with Steve McManus, because I think he came for this thing as well. And it was sort of that nice connection, and I think McManus was Celtic captain at the time, and now he's with the youth, and it's it's that sort of fairy tale of Celtic and the characters and the people. It's myth and legend stuff in a lot of ways. So I can't talk too much about his football ability other than that, but that's why he was very important to me personally.
Yeah. Jim, you don't need any introduction to the idea that football can be a miracle worker for people's memories with all your work with football memories.
Football memories. I've got a personal story about Jimmy Johnson. I only met him once, and I think it's been said before, I was involved in this supporters' campaign called Save Our Celts, and at the time, there's a guy called Terry Cassidy, and he banned the Lisbon Lions from the corporate duties at Celtic Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't buy the Sun, but somebody in the work had a copy of the Sun, and in the back page it was a comment from Jimmy Johnson. This was like 91, late 91, 92, something like that, when you just were kids. Although you born?
We were born, yeah. You've been far too kind. I think we were both born, yeah.
So I you're reading the Sun that day.
Yeah, I was born at that stage.
I don't think you're reading the Sun that day, but he was reading the Sun that day. Jimmy Johnson said, I've had enough. This guy Cassidy's going to ruin Celtic. And then I thought, maybe I should try and contact Jimmy Johnson, because if Jimmy Johnson get involved in this campaign, that would kind of elevate it a bit. You know? So I phoned the Sun and I spoke to the journalist concerned, and he gave me his number. So I've got Jimmy Johnson's phone number. And then later I realised, it's in the book. It's in the phone, but you can actually phone Jimmy Johnson, he's in the book. And so I phoned him, and then his Son answered, and I said who I was and why I was phoning, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, oh, my dad's out just now, I'll get my phone back, fine. And the next day, it was a Friday, so the next day it was a Saturday. So I'm having a bit of a lie, and I don't know, it's 9:30 or something, and the phone goes, and you answer the phone, speak to Jim, oh, yeah, it's Jimmy Johnson here. And I bet you think,
wow.
No. It's Jimmy Johnson here. How can I help you? So long story dead short, I don't want to take up too much of the podcast today. So anyway, I organised to meet him in his local pub in Uddingston and the following Tuesday night, I think it was. And then it was just going to be me and him. And then there was a committee of five people, and I told the other guys, and they said, no, we want to come. So the five of us trip over to Uddingston and Jimmy Johnson walks in, and it's like Elvis, basically, him walking in. Everyone's Jimmy, Jinky, buying him drinks, and all this kind of stuff. And then, I took him home. So I kind of drove Jimmy Johnson home. So that's my main claim to fame. That plus I met Bertie Auld. That's all I've done in life. And he was marvellous company, as everyone says he is, and with 1,000 stories to tell. And a kind of ordinary man who led this extraordinary life.
Yeah, I mean, I hear JP talking an awful lot about the people he's met and the places he's been and stuff, all in the music world. I've never heard the half the people he's talking about. I don't think you'll beat a wee name drop for Jimmy Johnson. So, fair play. Although I can't quite match that story, but this is an interesting one. I can claim to have seen Jimmy Johnson play football, and I'll show you why. I was getting reminded of this by my mum last night. So Just an Ordinary Boy tweeted this back in March. This is a picture of Billy McNeil and Paddy Creran coming out at Celtic Park in 1993 in a game that was the Lisbon Lions and an assortment of other people against a select 11 of the 1968 Man United Cup winning team with a selection of Coronation Street stars of the era.
Is that why you went?
That's why I went, yeah. As a 4-year-old, I was an avid watcher of Coronation Street. But
Ken Barlow CSC back in the day.
Barlow CSC, exactly. The reason we were there actually was my brother was part of Celtic Boys Club at the time and came back with a trophy from Europe for a tournament. He'd been at in Amsterdam, was parading a trophy. So we got a wee double there, a wee European trophy presentation, and then a chance to watch the Lisbon Lions, and it was all in celebration of the jungle getting knocked down. I think it was literally getting knocked down. That was on the 1st of June, 1993, and it was getting knocked down the next day. Do you remember anything about that game, Jim? Because we were Scrabble. I have vague memories of it as a 4-year-old, but I don't remember.
Well, you vague memories, jungle getting knocked down. They put seats in the jungle, which lasted that season, or a couple of seasons, and then because of the Taylor report falling Hillsborough, then they had to scrap the whole thing, and that's when Fergus came in at that point. Yeah. But Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a great time to be a Celtic fan in the early 90s. So a lot of the games kind of like, you think, did I see that game? I'm not very sure. Yeah. What was the score? We lost, obviously. Did we? Did we lose that night?
Oh,
as one of these goes to penalty kicks or something like that.
I can't remember the score, but I know Jinky did score. Jinky did score. Scored a lob, so... yeah.
Pretty good memories for a four-year-old. Excellent.
I can claim that, yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned that, though. I was Googling, any documented evidence of this game that I was sure I had been at, and Paul Cooney's doing an interview with Billy McNeil, Tommy Gemmell, and Paddy Crerand, and they've got some guy from the board basically there to explain why the stand's getting knocked down, and Paul Cooney says to him, bit strange that you're knocking this down and rebuilding it when there's the move to Canvas Lang happening soon. So it was like this wee like time capsule of when everything was up in the air, like you said, such a strange time for the club and nobody knew what direction it was going in.
That's a podcast in itself.
I'm sure we'll get there one day.
Another day, yes.
That being left aside, we'll move on to other things. But before we do that, I'll just bring up some comments that we've got sitting. Monty says, Laura, Jim and Brian, afternoon.
Afternoon, Monty.
Ryan Kelly says, afternoon, everyone. So hope you're enjoying watching Ryan so Kelly. Far. Don't forget to like and subscribe and do all that stuff. I'm not going to bore you with the usual spiel, but if you can do, definitely do that. And vote for us and Natasha in the Football Content Awards. Paul assures me the links will be down in the description down below, so please get involved and vote for us in that. But we'll move on to football and topics. Brian, I'll come to you first. Obviously, just back from the international break, positive for anybody who's interested in terms of the outcome for Scotland, but we're more interested, obviously, in getting back to matters regarding Celtic. Wasn't the best way to go off into the international break with the loss to St Mirren. I guess the question that comes to my mind is, has that been a welcome break for us, a chance to get away and reflect and rebuild, or would you have preferred to get back to winning ways straight away? How do you think the international break's going to affect us going into this next section of the season?
So there's a couple of ways of looking at it. First of all, just you acknowledged Natasha there. Big shout out for her. What an absolute job she does. And to be nominated individually is incredible. So definitely get voting. So we shout out for Miko there. I don't know if she's in Hollywood or somewhere else exotic now, but if she's watching.
She'll be somewhere. She'll be somewhere you can contact her.
Like Carmen San Diego, she could be anywhere. So I think that the thing was, whenever you lose a game, you always want to get the next game right away so you can get back to confidence, get back to playing. The flip side of that is you've got 2 weeks to sort of build up that sort of rage, the annoyance about it, and want to come back stronger. I don't think for a second anyone in that squad at all would have left thinking, oh, this is good, we've got a break. I think they've been desperate to put it right. I get the feeling that...
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
And it's obviously just anecdotes, I don't know, but I get the feeling that's a squad full of players that are very, very, very proud to play a certain way and to get results and to win and win well. And I think there's that connection for the fans as well. I think Ange was sort of more annoyed that the fans were let down, you know, as well as losing the game. I think that there's a couple of ways you can look at it. I would suggest that they'd have probably liked the game right away, but I think you can absolutely expect a reaction. I don't think you get too many times you see a performance like that for this side. I think the last time we played that badly was probably Bodø Glimt. And it's weird, I was chatting about this the other night, actually. You can kind of almost take a positive from it in that the whole team is bad. I know that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but if we'd been playing kind of poorly for a couple of weeks, we get results, or five or six players have been out of form, and then we lost, you'd be thinking, oh, this has been coming.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, it was such an off day for everyone. That doesn't happen too many times. And see, given the fact the last time was against Bodø, we were all really bad,
mm-hmm.
you've got to think we're probably going to come back strong. And if that's the hiccup we have it at this time. Have it at that game, because we're still ahead in the league anyway. There's plenty of time to do that back. You know, if that's the second last game of the season, that's a worry. If it's a European game and play like that, that's a worry. So I think you can, if you're looking at it objectively, I think you can say if you're going to take a black eye, take it at this stage, where you play and you move on.
No, I think that's fair enough, and I'm kind of in agreement with you. Jim, I don't think have been on since the St Mirren game, so what was your kind of summation of the performance? Where do you think we went wrong, considering how well we've been performing up until then?
How long have we got left?
I don't know if we've got enough time, but we've got time.
No black eyes at any point in the season. I was on a couple of weeks ago, hosted by Brian Degren. Very, very well, by the way. That boy's got a future.
I don't know. I think there's better out
there. You'll need to bring your A game, Laura, because that boy's got a future. I'm telling you, that boy's got a future. He asked lots of very good questions, the boy Degren. And one of the ones he says, we're talking about the team a couple of weeks ago.
You're running down your time here, Jim. Come on.
No. Hi, my name is Jim. Who do you play? And I think on the panel, in the comments, people will say, no, I'd like to see such and such. I'd like to see such and such. No, you don't like to see such and such. You play your best team. You always play your best team. Because if I'm a manager and I play my best team and they lose, I'll say, look, play my best team. If you don't play your best team and you lose, then you're open to criticism at that point. I love Ange. I love Ange as a football manager, as a person. I don't have Ange's pyjamas like Brian has Matt O'Reilly pyjamas, but I think he's brilliant. You know, he's absolutely brilliant, and he'll make hundreds of decisions every single week. You know, and he's forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. You know, big man. But I don't understand what he did against St Mirren. I really don't understand, because all we see is the team he picks and the substitutions that he makes. So when he plays that team, you're thinking, this is a bit risky today. The international break's coming up, as you said, so why don't you play your best team and why don't you get the game put to bed early on? And then if you want to see Abelgaard and Hak Sabanovic and all these guys, another question Brian asked was, who do I think the top member of this season so far? And without question, I thought it was Hatate and Jota straight away. Because although Kalmak and O'Reilly have had a great season, Hatate's the wee spark in the middle of the park. You know, that pass he made against Real Madrid has been shown throughout Europe. Give me a pass. He takes the ball in difficult situations. Five guys with him, don't care. I'll take it. I'll play passes. He scores goals. And Jota's been phenomenal this season, whether he's scoring goals, brilliant goals, or making goals for other. He's been brilliant. And we played Real Madrid a few weeks ago. And if you're a Celtic player about to play Real Madrid and the team lines come through, and you're looking at the team lines and you're saying, Benzema's playing, Modric's playing, and the rest of them, psychologically you're thinking, this is a hard shift today, we should get it doing today, this isn't good. If you're St Mirren and you're sitting there and you're saying, Jota's no playing, Hatate's no playing, what kind of boost does that give you at that point in time? And the thing is, I didn't know it because I didn't do the research last time, that St Mirren had something like 7 clean sheets in 10 games over the course of last season and this season. They play in a wee kind of tight park. They compress the space. They play deep or low block, as the kids say these days. Abada and Maeda, are they wingers? Not for me. So we've got two guys who, I mean, Abada's made a fantastic contribution this season, none more so than the Glasgow Derby. But they don't have great close control and their crossing is pretty average. I think, in a wee tight park, we've got Kyogo in the middle against two big centre-halves. Kyogo's main forte is finding space behind their back line, like they did at Tannadice, where he was phenomenal. You're not going to get any space at St Mirren. 7 clean sheets out of 10. Two guys playing in the wing who maybe not, you know, be as good as what you could have. So I think straight away, that was difficult. And I think we gave him 3 points.
Mm.
And we can't even give him 3 points, particularly after what happened 2 weeks before. That was such a high. You know, we're like, you know, people were saying we could be invincible this season. You were blowing teams away. And the big man himself said after the game, maybe I got the team selection wrong. And the fact he brought in Hatate and Yota at halftime, I think that was an admission. And then the strips. I mean, the strips didn't cause a defeat. But in a game where you make split-second decisions, Bill Shankly always says, find a red jersey.
Yeah.
That's all I tell them, is find a red jersey. And when you're playing in that split, and particularly against St Mirren in a wee tight park where you're having to do things quickly. We've put a lad Moy in the middle of the park, and he seems to want an extra touch as well. If you're playing Calmack is zipping the ball about. He took an extra touch, and that gives them an extra couple of seconds to press, to fall back, to compress the space and make it harder. So I couldn't understand. Love Ange to death. Brilliant guy. Love him. And for every 100 things he does, he maybe gets one wrong. And I think St Mirren was maybe that kind of one wrong. Another thing I said 2 weeks ago in the podcast, expertly hosted by Brian, was that I thought the 9-0 game was the most significant game of the season, because what it did, it was put a marker down. It was basically saying, we will come to any team in this Leeds ground and we will score for fun.
Mm.
And we'll score. And even if you're the main rivals, we'll score for fun. Right? And that puts teams, again, psychologically on the back foot straight away. And that's why I was annoyed about the Glasgow derby, because 1-2-3 goals in the first half, and if you're Ange and we never stop, then it's 4-5-6 in the second half. And we didn't do that in the Glasgow derby. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be churlish. I mean, I would take 3-0 half-time scores every Glasgow derby from now on in.
Yeah.
But if we'd have went 4-5-6 the second half, their manager could never have survived that.
No.
He'd been at the door the next day. They'd have been in turmoil. And unfortunately, the games get cancelled. You know, for whatever reason, the games get cancelled. And they were going to Pittodrie against a team who took 4 points off them last season with a captain injured on the back of 2-4-0 defeats. We're at home at Livingston. Chances are, might have extended the 5-point lead. Chances are they could have been turmoil. But football being football, it turns in its head and they scrape a victory against the team at the bottom of the league who we hammer 9-0, and we give St Mirren the 3 points. And all of a sudden, and that's what makes tomorrow really interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian said, you know, I think we'll go out tomorrow and we'll sort them out. I hope we do, because then it's just a blip. Then it is just a blip.
Yeah.
Because if we don't go out and hammer them tomorrow and it's a tight game, or heaven forbid we drop some points, what that does is give encouragement to all the other teams who 2 weeks ago saw us as invincible. We're not going to touch them. We're going to get a doing. To like, you know what? St Mirren beat them. You know, yeah. And a few of their main rivals looking at the game thinking, how do we lose 4-0 to that team? You know, so I think tomorrow's going to be dead interesting. Like Brian, I am confident we're going to come back, and I'm not trying to overreact to what happened, because you don't really know what's going to happen until well on to the season. I always remember, was it when Big Yaki Mackie missed a penalty against Livingston in injury time, people were cracking up. Oh, that could be vital come the end of the season. It wasn't. So yeah, we'll sit. I know I'm sounding a bit negative, but I'm not. I hope it's a blip. But I was a bit concerned. And now we've got injuries. So my understanding is we've got a number of injuries. So yep. That's going to make it a bit more challenging. And then we've got I'm sure we'll come on to this, the kind of 13 games in 43 days or something like that. So It's dead exciting. Don't get me wrong. It's just dead exciting. But that was my summation of the St Mirren game. Not very good.
Not very good.
but it's Ange. And Ange will find a solution because it's Ange.
I hope he does. Brian, just to come off the back of what Jim's saying there, Shaken's laptop says Ange underestimated St Mirren. It was a mistake that not many called out at the time, as we should be beating them with a second sound side. Yeah, Ange learned a lesson, that's for sure. And John Hill follows that up with Ange got it wrong against St Mirren. No debate, it wouldn't happen again. Yeah. Lessons learned.
Yeah.
I think, Brian, what Jim says there and what I agree with is that there's no issue with saying, as much as we all love Ange and he's put the club back on an even keel after a very tumultuous time, there's no harm in saying he got it wrong when he did get it wrong. But I think the big difference, like Jim touched on and like the listeners touched on there, we have the confidence that it's not going to be a blip. Whether that turns out that it's not going to be a blip, that it's not going to be a long-lasting thing, that it is going to be a blip, whether that turns out to be the case or not, remains to be seen. But are you confident that, like Jim said, like you were talking about before, that we can just come out and kind of put it behind us and get on with the season the way we were playing before?
Yeah, I'm very confident of that. I don't see any reason why. There's nothing when you're at a time when I'm looking at opinions, when I'm trying to form my own opinion, I try and look at, is there evidence or am I being hyperbolic? Because there is a tendency for me to go either way, if I'm honest. My Geiger is a bit off at times. But evidence suggesting to me that that was a blip. There's nothing to suggest there's been a problem coming. So I've got two thoughts that are almost contradictory, right? So the first thought is, I didn't understand why he rotated the full team when we were going to an international break. I thought that was very strange. I didn't expect there might be some rotation of certain players. I've said consistently, I don't think, and this is maybe where I've been proved wrong, I don't think there was such a thing as a total A side and a total B side. I felt that maybe certain players would be the spine in the team and then there would other players dropping in and out accordingly. So I was surprised when he changed the full team ahead of a break, because normally you would think, maybe he does that if there's a light, the 13 games in 43 days, I expect to see rotation now coming up.
Yep.
Where I slightly push back against some things is, there's no, like, that team on paper should have beat St Mirren.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a bad, it might have been the strongest side, but it wasn't a bad side. They just were all bad that day. And even the players that came on, they never changed much. And they were the sort of main players. And maybe you could say they committed the game too late and stuff, but I just think it was a bad day at the office for everyone, and including. I don't think it, like, I think that team should have been capable of winning. The one thing that somebody, I think it was Brian Warrior in the comments, mentioned Moy. Mm-hmm. So last time I was on a podcast with Kev Green, we were talking about Moy. And he thought he would play deep. And I said, I think he'd be a good player for us, but he has to play further forward, like a Rodgick, where you're not really relying on the athleticism. And I think that was kind of exposed a bit, because he did really lag in that midfield. His passing is excellent, and he's a really good player to have in the squad, but just knowing that role, I don't think. And I think that you saw McGregor replacing it.
Yeah.
Which also backs up the fact that McGregor's, I think, probably still the most valuable player, because there's no one else can do what he can do in that team, which is a wee bit of a concern. But we've met to see the big game. How do you see his name? Is it Abelgaard?
Abelgaard, I think. I mean, I'm not Danish by any stretch.
Applegate, right.
Laura's not Danish, shocker.
Laura Bradburn and not being Danish, shocker.
Yeah,
every day's a school day, Brian. Every day's a school day.
I'm shocked. But I think that was a lesson that Ange maybe got wrong, tactically. But again, I can't be too critical, because I thought on paper that team should have won. My concern for that game, and again, I think it may turn into a positive, so just try and bear with me as I get my head around this ridiculous statement, is St Mirren beat us the very obvious way a team would beat us. They sat in, they were tight, and they had two big strikers that put up a backline under pressure, so when we pressed up, they were able to push on to their centre-backs, and the balls came up, and then they sort of attacked at pace, and they were bullied at corners. That's probably how teams should set up against us if they're trying to beat us. And I think most of the time they do. It's a combination of St Mirren doing it really well, because they were very good. That's another thing we have to mention. They were excellent. And they executed that game plan perfectly. It's just normally we've got an answer for that. So what it'd be interesting to see is if teams think, oh, St Mirren doing it, let's keep that. Let's keep doing that. Because I think that would be to our benefit. Because I don't think that combination, I don't think that perfect storm of them having the best game, us having the absolute worst, is going to be the narrative for the rest of the season. I think you come in and teams, if teams set up like that against us, I think 99 times out of 100 will win. It was just disappointing the way St Mirren executed their game plan so perfectly, and it was almost the most obvious game plan to set up against us. But again, a blip, we'll go forward. I don't expect it to happen. I think we'll drop points at some point in the season, of course. We make games where we don't play that well, but I don't expect that level of performance again. I think that it was so flat. And I think it's testament to the work they've done, because it was so flat. It was like, what's going on? It wasn't like, as I say, we'd been kind of poor for a couple of weeks and he sort of expected us to struggle. It was so stark in terms of that compared to what we saw. And that's why, long road for a shortcut, I don't see it happening again. Not for a while anyway.
I think also I said a few weeks ago that I could see is we could luckily afford to lose three games this season now with the Glasgow derbies. But the games I thought we would lose would be like Petodre or Tynecastle or Easter Road. I didn't expect us to lose at St Mirren. So that's a sloppy defeat.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
As well as a sloppy performance, it's not the kind of wins. It means that you can't afford now to lose at Tynecastle or Easter Road or whatever. So that's a wee bit of a concern. It's also the fact that a cloak of invincibility is now no longer there, because as I said 5 minutes ago, teams looked at us thinking that we can get it done today. Now maybe something like, you know what, we can maybe beat this team today. So that's maybe changed. I also like the fact that Brian said he likes to argue with himself. Maybe I could just drop out and maybe just let Brian argue with himself for the last half hour. I'd watch that.
Do you know something? After having one match coverage with Brian back in the day, I think it was one of the cup finals or something.
Well, it's left a mark, obviously.
I'd quite like just a solo cam on Brian for a game. That should just be the match coverage for a day.
There's a lot of emotions, Jim. It's the reason I don't do match coverage normally. But that day, it was Big Tony, Haggerty, Laura and myself, and me doing a watch-along. And it was quite an experience for the guys. And I'll give myself quite a lot during that game, I think. Like, I was making crazy calls, and I said, what went wrong? And then change it, and it was an experience.
There was all sorts of noises coming. I didn't know what they were or where they were coming from, but it was interesting.
It was an experience.
Is that an alternative to therapy? Just cam on you watching a game?
It might be a confirmation that therapy wouldn't be a bad idea, but we'll leave it there.
That's more accurate.
Before we move on, just to close out this section of the show, we've been talking about the overcoming the international break. For anybody interested, if you follow Paul John on Twitter or A Celtic State of Mind, you'll have seen this tweet this morning about Celtic targeting a certain Steve Clark as a defender back on this day. I can't see the date on that. Is it 1988? 1989? 86, there we go. See, I wasn't around then, Jim, that's a problem. So we were targeting him for a move. It obviously never came off, and he did go down to Chelsea. I don't know if anybody wants to talk about the three in the picture there. I see Brian McLear and Murdo McLeod. I'm not sure who the other one is. We'll not talk any more about him, I don't think.
Souness came and they won the league that season. But if the Celtic board had spent a couple of bob and a couple of defenders, one of which was Steve Clark, then I think Davy Hayes' team would have won the league. He asked for the money and famously was told, if you want to spend, you spend your own money. So that was the Celtic board of the time. Always good going forward. Round about that team, that was one of my favourite Celtic teams with Murdo and McLear, and 2 or 3 years before that was Charlie Nick and Frank McGavin. So always good going forward, always left gaps at the back. I think in that 86-87 season, I think at the new year, we were something like 5 or 6 points ahead in the new year, and Davy Hay never got the players he wanted, and they came back and won the league, and that was the start of the kind of revolution across the south side. So there you go.
What a time to be alive. I can't imagine that kind of turmoil on both sides of Glasgow with the supposed upturn in fortunes for Rangers and us entering probably one of the darkest periods in the club's
history. Well, they were very similar to what Celtic went through in the late 80s and 90s. They hadn't won the league in 9 years or so, and then Souness comes. But I think if the Celtic board didn't have to spend a lot of money. I mean, Steve Clark was a defender. There's a guy called Joe McLaughlin, who they wanted to sign as well, who eventually went to Chelsea. Two good, good solid defenders, and that's what we needed, because going forward, score goals for fun. And and the guy in the picture, just to go off a bit of a tangent, the guy in the picture who shall not be named, I always think that was one of the big points in Scottish football, where if things had happened differently, then the whole thing would have been changed. That if Mo Johnson had signed for us and stayed with us, I don't think they would have won 9 in a row. Because they were in the suit with after Nicholas as well. And if you look at Johnson and Nicholas in 89, they'd have scored 60 goals between them, you know, and there would have been no 9 in a row. So I always think that's one of the big ones. Not, I mean, obviously it would have made big news for a different reason, but he was one of the top maybe five or six strikers in Europe at that point in time, Mo Johnson. And if we'd have got him, I'd have no doubt we'd have scored goals for fun. And even with a bad defence, we'd have scored goals for fun, and we'd have won the league in the next couple of seasons. So, and certainly if we'd take Charlie Nick back at that point in time. Anyway, that's an old man talking. Let's go into the current non-Danish Laura.
It's funny when you think of these sliding doors moments, though. But like, you talk about Steve Clarke being linked. There was a strong possibility he was going to be Celtic manager before Ange. Mm-hmm. Remember, it was linked quite strongly. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there was talks, I don't know if it was all nonsense or not. And you think how different last season, this season, could have been the style of football we play. Could have been different under Clarke. He's very effective for Scotland, but you don't know if he would necessarily wanted to see that for Celtic. And it's just interesting how different that could have been as well. Around Stevie Clarke. It's funny how things tangentially come together.
Yeah, and the fact we talk about
sliding doors moments. Sorry, Laura, on you.
That's all right. I was just going to say another sliding doors moment is the fact that Dom Mackay was supposedly so instrumental in bringing in Ange Postecoglou, and he's not here anymore. So you could absolutely boggle your brain going back saying, well, if that hadn't happened, that wouldn't have happened. It's just strange.
My theory is, though, in my opinion, that in my lifetime, I think there's been four sliding doors moments that had the most significant impact in Scottish football. One was Jim Baxter breaking his leg for Rangers in 1964, start of 65. What would have happened if Baxter hadn't broke his leg instead of Rangers at that point in time? Second is Jock Steen coming to Celtic Park. What happened if that didn't happen? The next one is Souness going to Ibrox in 86, and Mo Johnson's the last one, I think. I think any of those four don't happen, then I think it's got a significant difference in Scottish football. And you can say, well, Dom Mackay, if that didn't happen, maybe we wouldn't have won the league last year. You know, a kind of one season thing. But I think those four sliding doors moment had a huge impact. And as anyone would say, any Celtic fan would say, if Jock Steen didn't come to Celtic Park, Celtic are not the team they are now. Celtic don't win the European Cup. They don't win 9 in a row. They don't have that kind of legacy. And that's something that I pointed out, back to me writing plays, about the 97-98 season, where Celtic were viewed as a big club in 97-98 because they won the European Cup before. They won 9 in a row before. So they were through these bad times compared to a benchmark that was pretty high. Whereas the Celtic team before Jock Steen came, in world terms, they're as well known as, Hibs or Aberdeen or somebody, know that well. And it was Jock Steen that he set the bar, and the bar's been too high. that we still haven't cracked it yet. But yeah, for me, that's the kind of four big moments in Scottish football in my lifetime. Maybe there's ones before that, but I'm sure the ones before that. But anyway, old man talking again, back to the present day. Non-Danish Laura.
Non-Danish me, but yeah, sliding doors moments. You never know they've happened until a long time after, usually, which is interesting as well. But we'll see if any more happen in the future. Moving on slightly to, we've touched on it already, but Greg Taylor was being interviewed by Celtic TV this week and talking about, a particularly intense period of the season coming up. The fact that obviously we're going into an extended winter break because of the World Cup, and we're having to, I think by the 12th of November or something like that, we've got to play 13 games between domestic and Europe. Brian, you mentioned before about not really agreeing with the wholesale rotation of the team that Ange did against St Mirren. What's clear is that over the next few weeks between now and the shutdown in November, there's going to need to be rotation. Do we have the strength and depth that we maybe thought we did before the St Mirren game to see out this period without sustaining too much damage in the title chase.
Yeah, I do. It's not that I'm against rotation. I just didn't expect the full rotation. I thought it'd be like you'd maybe see a Ralston come in for a Juranovic and Haksabanovic for a Jota one game, and then they'd drop out and maybe two other ones would rotate, but that kind of thing, just depending on whose legs were the strongest. So the main body of the team would be, so you still always have Carter Vickers, McGregor, probably Kyogo, George. Do you know what I mean? You'd have a spine and people rotate around. I still think the squad's very, very, very strong. Just a minute game aside, I've no worries. If he puts that team out tomorrow, I still think we win. The team plays something in, I mean.
Yeah.
And that's no being sort of negative, because it's still a very, very strong team. Because you can't let that one game, it can then dictate, you know, the rest of the season. So I think we'll have to rotate. It would be interesting to see if he rotates the full squad again. Maybe that's something he might, you know, consider. But yeah, when you're playing that many games and that amount of time, the sort of intensity we play, something's going to have to give. And if we're honest, he will prioritise Europe probably.
Mm-hmm.
All I want to say, right, let's keep the sort of main players, they're the priority for that game. If they can play two games in a week or whatever it's going to be, fine. If there's a danger, I think he would drop them for a domestic game because the squad should be strong enough. Again, could be wrong. We need to see how injuries are as well. It's been a bit... He's for a guy that's very vocal, the big man's not clear all the time about injuries. He doesn't give much away, so I don't really know where it's at with Carter Vickers or how serious, you know, Giakoumakis' injury is, where Starfield is going to be. So there is... You're going to have to consider as well that...
Did I see Haksabanovic potentially has got an injury as well?
Yeah, he stretched off as well. So yes, there's a lot to consider as well. So it may be forced rotation, it may be by choice, it may be apparently Hugo was really poor for Japan the other day and was hooked at half-time, so maybe a form thing. So, you know, there's a million factors going to team selection. I don't think it's just for the one reason. So I will expect rotation. I just don't know if I'll expect a full team rotation again.
Yeah, I'm just interested to see who Japan have got in midfield that Hatate can't get a game. But
you know what? I see you sitting on the bench. It's poor for him. I'm quite happy. I would like Jim. I think he's exceptional for us, and he's so different in what he offers. It's kind of unpredictable, even like for us watching it, what he's going to give, which is why I kind of love him. So I don't mind him if he's not playing and he comes back safely and we're all right. Although he can get injured the training, I suppose, but it's just... You always worry about when it's a competitive game people are playing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. No, he can sit there as long as he wants. It's just I'm also interested in signing up some of his compatriots if they're keeping him out of the team. Jim, it is an intense period coming up, particularly because of the strange placement of the World Cup this year and all that kind of thing. I guess the other concern I would have, and I wondered your thoughts on it, is... Do you think, where will the priority lie? Will it lie with Europe? Will it lie domestically if you have to prioritise one over the other over the next few weeks? Like, how do you think Ange is going to sort of navigate his way through this with the team that he's got?
That's a really good question. Why are we doing this? Because of the World Cup, and obviously football again, so the fact that it's in Qatar, the fact that it's in the winter time, if that's not happening then, we don't play, whether it was 13 games in 43 days. So that's a scandal to start off with. Okay, that'll be point in. We're the biggest team in Scotland, any measure you want to look at. Therefore, we should be good enough, for a big enough squad to take care of most of the teams. Certainly at home, I don't see any issues. But if we go to, Tynecastle in a few weeks' time, so there's a bit of a test. Europe's a level up, and I think if we're missing Carter Vickers and we're missing Starfield, then I'm kind of veering to going behind the couch again, whereas those first two games we had, I was kind of like, you know, shouting and bawling against Real Madrid and sitting at the front of the couch watching the Shakhtar game. Leipzig with a new manager and maybe a new manager bounce and a depleted defence. I think that may be a harder game than we thought 2 weeks ago. Again, football changes really quickly. 2 weeks ago, we thought we're going to get a second place in the Champions League. We're going to qualify for the last 16. We're going to go through the season undefeated. Now we're a bit more unsure, because that St Mirren result sets back a little bit. The injuries may be more significant. And as you said, Brian, we don't know who's injured. And obviously, the big man doesn't want to give much away, understandably so. But games at home with the squad that we've got shouldn't be an issue. The away game is a bit more of a challenge. Europe domestic, usually I would say Europe, that, you know, that's where you get judged in Europe. So, yes, I agree with Brian. I think he'll look to Europe to try and to make an impact, and he should have enough squad players to get by. But barring injuries, it's difficult always to try and play your best team. I think that my kind of best team theory last time was because that international break was coming up. There was no issues to rest players. The 13 games in 43 days, yeah, I think he'll have to be a bit more sensible in terms of how he plays and who he plays, etc., etc. It's just dead exciting. Having 13 games in 43 days is great. I mean, we've had that 2 weeks of no football when you get up the wall. We had that game where all the games were cancelled and you get up the wall. So having 13 games quickly coming up, hopefully we don't have a lot of injuries, because I think that's now the bit that's kind of making me think a bit more that maybe this season wasn't going to be straightforward as I thought. And are the guys that are coming up good enough, and do they fit into the system? Because our thinking was it'll be seamless. These guys will come in and they'll do a good job. And let's hope St Mirren was a blip and was a one-off. And let's hope a good performance tomorrow, a good result, more importantly, makes that the case. And then we move on from then. Because in football, being confident, momentum and all these kind of stuff, these are dead important. We've had a wee setback there, you know, and that's made some of the players think maybe we're not as good as we thought we were. We need to get that momentum back. We need to get that confidence back. We need to get the guys who are not playing many games, if they are called upon, they do put a performance in. I think they let themselves down a wee bit at St Mirren, albeit I think it was the wrong team that we played and that didn't help. So, yeah, it's just dead exciting 43 days coming up. Loads of football, and be interesting to see where we are at the end of the 43 days. If we're still 2 points ahead in the league and we've guaranteed European football after Christmas, I'm not fussed about the League Cup, then for me that'll be good. It'd be good to go another couple of points ahead. The fact that we've got three Glasgow derbies still to play and two are away, I always think 4 points would be better. I mean, they're at Tynecastle tomorrow. There's a potential banana skin, so if they could maybe draw a couple of points and we win and we get a 4-point gap, that'd be ideal. So if we fast forward to 43 days time, I'd like to be 4 points ahead, and we've got some sort of games in Europe after the winter break.
That sounds ideal to me. And then we've got an entire month worth in the lead up to Christmas to enjoy some international football as well. But Brian, Jim touched on the injuries there that you had brought up as well after the international break, and it brings us nicely on to the next topic I was going to talk about. We are going to close the show out with a brief preview of the game tomorrow. But before we do that, Brian, I was talking about it in the group chat this morning. I know people hate it when we mention the group chat, but what can we do? That's how we communicate. I talked about the fact that Idiguchi has not been seen very much in a Celtic shirt. I think only 6 appearances since he came in that January with Maeda and Kyogo and Hatate. I guess my question to you is twofold. One, you know, I've heard a lot of people say he's unlucky. He's had a bad run of injuries. We all know the game against Alloa where he got injured, where they had a less than stellar approach to how they were playing the game. But he's had other injuries beside that. And I guess my question to you is, one, when do injuries stop becoming a case of bad luck and start becoming just a feature of a player that you don't find desirable? And the other thing is, given his injury history so far in a Celtic shirt, do you see him having been able to turn it around and create a future at the club for himself?
In terms of the injuries, it's hard to comment, right? Because it's like Mikey Johnson was always injured, and there's questions. Is it the physicality? Can he handle? Is it just his body's no up to it? Is it a wee injury that keeps recurring? I don't know the injury situation with Idiguchi. But what I would say is, I got rinsed in the summer because I said that in the rating, and I think I didn't think he would play much this season. And people were like, "Oh, get a guy a chance." I was like, "Who's he better than in that midfield that you've seen? What is his best position? What is the one feature about Adeguchi that you would go, that's what he brings to the team?" You can see what Turnbull can do, what Moy can do, McGregor, et al. You can tell what everyone can do and why he should be in the team. Adeguchi doesn't present any of that to me. Anything I have seen him play, I think he's all right. But I just don't see what he gives. And I know I seem really harsh on the guy. He's probably a great human being and he's also a good footballer. But I just don't think I ever go, I really hope Adeguchi's in the team today. There's just nothing about, and I think the fact he's not featured at all, whether that's been injuries or just selection, I would imagine he'd probably go in January. It's kind of like McCarthy, but at least even with McCarthy, I know what he offers.
Yeah.
You know, I know what he can bring. You know, I know what type of player he is. But Adeguchi, for me, you know, God bless him. I hope he has a good career, but I don't think he'll be at Celtic. I don't think he'll be here much longer.
Jim, what do you make of Brian's comments there? Because I think Brian did get a hard time. Because I personally think, if you, regardless of the reason for it, if you don't see enough from a player to suggest he's any better than what you've got, I totally take on board Brian's point that, you know, he's not, he wouldn't be the preferred choice. But what do you make of those comments and what we're talking about the injury? Is that going to stop him from having a career at Celtic, do you think?
Brian said, "God bless him." <It was great. laughs> God bless him. Yeah. I think we've been a wee bit harsh. We haven't seen enough of the guy yet. That was a horrendous injury he got at Alloa. Really, really was horrendous. And it must be tough for the player. A new country, new language, new culture. The three other Japanese guys are doing so well. And he must be thinking, I'm kind of letting the side down a wee bit. I haven't contributed very much. I agree with Brian. It's really difficult to get into that starting 11. And if we do have injuries just now, maybe this is his chance. And I think you have to see him in a few games to kind of make your mind up as to what he's like. I mean, Hatate walks into the team and, you know, scores two in the Glasgow derby and pings a 30-yarder against Hearts. I mean, what if Adeguchi does the same thing against Motherwell tomorrow? You know, all of a sudden he's a player. I don't need to be given enough opportunities. I think the nature of that horrendous tackle against Alloa, I would give him a chance. Again, I wouldn't give him a chance in Portland League games. I'd play him in the League Cup if he was fit, along with other guys, to see what they're like. Because at the moment, we've not seen enough of him to say he should be in that first 11. Absolutely not. But we've not seen enough of him. I don't know what he offers. And I agree with Brian. I'm not sure where he is. Is he a 6? Is he an 8? Is he a 10? I'm just not very sure. He's not been given any game time, so it's hard to be too, don't want to be too harsh on somebody who's hardly kicked the ball. And I think maybe the comparison with Mickey Jones is a bit unfair, because Mickey's been kicking about for a number of seasons. I mean, Adeguchi's not long in the door. Is that what, a season now? Is that?
I think it's just the fact that he's had a career sort of plagued with injuries. I think
fair point. Oh no, absolutely fair point. But I think you can only
just at Celtic. He's quite injury prone.
Of course, but I think until you see the guy playing the field, I always think you need about half a dozen games to kind of see what somebody's like. And I think it'd be a shame if we curtail it, because we don't know what kind of player we've got. For all we know, we've got this superstar in waiting if we can get the guy fit and get him playing. And obviously, Ange thinks he's a player. So, and if Ange thinks he's a player, he needs a wee chance. Football's a hard game. Sometimes you just don't get the break. Sometimes you don't get an opportunity. Sometimes you get an opportunity and you take it where you thought you wouldn't have got an opportunity. So, yeah, we've not seen enough of him. And if he gets a chance, let's see what he's like. But God bless him anyway. That's my main takeaway.
Do you know what it reminds me a bit of? I remember having a discussion, I think it was with Colin, about Dembele. Before he left, and he's like, "Oh, I'd really like to see him in Angie's team. I think he'd do really well." And I says, "Well, where's the evidence of that though? Because anything I've never seen him and thought, what a game he had. I've always heard that they tell him he's a really good player. I've always heard
totally agree. Totally agree. Really,
so yeah. I think just in my crazy brain, if I don't see the players doing it, it's hard for me to kind of go, you know, I expect this, I expect that. I think it's the lack of expectation is the problem with the Gucci, because I just don't know what, you know, and that's not me being snide about Celtic career, just in general, I don't really know what he offers. So the development was slightly different, but the point being that I hadn't seen enough to really justify excitement, and I think it's the same with the Gucci for me.
Because I think also in the Dembele one, that again, he never played six games where you could, from the start, where you could say, what can this guy offer? And I always think it's really difficult when you only get 20 minutes at the end of a game. You've been all week, you're looking forward to playing a game and you're on the bench. And either you're coming on when the game's won, it's too easy, or you've been asked to try and get the team out of a hole. You know, and I think that's really, really difficult. And until you get those, I think, half a dozen games, then you can see what somebody's like. I mean, Dembele obviously was meant to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, but didn't get a chance. So we'll see how things end up for him. But I just think we just haven't seen enough of Eddie Gucci, and could be good, could be bad. We don't really know.
It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, from a personal point of view, you just don't like to see any player going through that number of injuries, regardless. And hopefully, whether it's at Celtic or elsewhere, he's able to put back together his football career after what's been a bit of a rubbish period for him, and all the best to him for getting back fit and healthy, and if it's in a Celtic shirt, all the better. End of the show, so we will briefly preview the match tomorrow. A rare, well, I don't know if it is rare or not, I've heard people say they're rare now, but a rare 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday against Motherwell. Jim, is this a good fixture for us to get back up and running? Is this the type of fixture that's just ideal to get us back into the swing of things? What do you think of Motherwell as an opponent?
I think a home game against anyone's good. Big wide spaces at Celtic Park. I think Motherwell will be a bit up and down this season. I think they're eighth, but there's only 3 points separate eighth and third. So a bit of a kind of mixed bag, sitting in the middle of the table, be a physical game, as it always is. They don't lose many goals, but they don't score many goals either. So it's up to us to break them down. Hopefully we get an early goal and take things from there and sort of consign the St Mirren game to history. Yeah, it's a good game because it's a home game. And don't know what the injuries are. You know, I could maybe see James Forrest coming back tomorrow, possibly. Mm-hmm. Somebody. We need teams that can do a team. We need players who can open up defences, because they're going to just pack a defence because they're fearful of getting a doing. And that's why we need that, you know, we need that spark in the kind of front third that we kind of lacked against St Mirren. So, and I think the bigger pitch will help as well. But yeah, we really need to win tomorrow and make a kind of statement that says, you know, if you think you can beat us, think again, because, you know, we've just scored 4 or 5 against Motherwell. That was a blip. But I think if we have a nervy win, or heaven forbid we drop any points, then things become a lot more exciting than they should be. You know, so, but I think we'll win. I think we'll win 3-0, say, tomorrow.
A good prediction. I quite like that. I would go with 3-0 as well. Brian, Jim's talked there about putting a statement out there and saying, if you think you can beat us, think again. How are we going to do that? What selections would you like to see, considering all the injuries and things? Who are you looking forward to seeing represent us tomorrow?
To be honest, I think that when you look at our team and how we're going to set up, very few players started for their international teams, other than, like, I think what you would say probably is our strongest team, or the team you would assume would be the strongest. You know, Jota never started for Portugal. You know, Kyogo didn't have the greatest time with Japan, to be fair, but with Yakimaki's been injured, or so we believe, he'll probably start. You've got Abada. So they should be really fresh and strong. Adati never played for Japan. I know O'Reilly was at the under-21s.
Yeah.
I expect them to start. McGregor
scored against Croatia, O'Reilly, actually. Yeah.
What a man. What a hero.
But I'm not Danish, guys. I'm not Danish.
No, not Danish.
You're going to get a Matt O'Reilly dressing gown now. The whole Matt O'Reilly compendium. Matt O'Reilly slippers, nightcap.
I've only just got the glitter off my face and my "I love you, Matt" sign. Right. That's going to be the game.
God bless you.
I'm only slight defences. I'm only concerned is defence, because I don't know what's happening with Carter Vickers. And if Stephen Mill starts, he needs to have a strong performance. I'm a big defender of his, but he got battered against St Mirren.
Mm.
wasn't his fault. Nobody was good, but he looked particularly vulnerable against the bigger player. So if he starts and looking for a big performance, and again, you might think he rests Taylor just because Taylor played a lot for Scotland. So you might see Burnaby coming in. I think Jens will start. And obviously, Big Joan goes. So there might be a couple of changes just through injuries and enforcements, but I think your sort of main players will start. And then again, it's up to the guys that lost against them, and when they get a chance in the future, they need to take it and put a marker down, which is a good position to be in, right? You want that competition, you want that sort of aggression.
So, Jim,
for the fact they're coming off the back of, I mean, having done some research this morning, which shows how good I am at this podcast thing, this day, Motherwell scored 7 goals in 7 games. In the last game they played, they lost 3-0 at home at Hearts. So I don't think they score many goals. So maybe I don't have so much concerns about the back. It's up to us to break them down.
Yeah, I think so. Jim said 3-0. I've agreed with Jim. The Urban Coach, he says, Glasgow Celtic 4, Motherwell 0. Brian, what are you going with? What's your score prediction?
I'll agree with Coulshay, 4-0.
4-0. Well, if it's 3 or 4-0, I'll take that. Brian, Jim, thank you very much for joining me today. All the listeners and commenters, thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to vote for us if you can do. The links will be down below. Underwater Cabbage Salesman says, just before we go, I'm not the Danish girl. I certainly hope not. I've seen the film, and the less said about that, the better. Jim,
what film's this?
Jim, give it a watch. It'll be an education, I'm sure.
Well, bless you.
Right. Goodbye, everybody.
Dear Laura.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.